Welcome to the 295th episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I am your host for today, Patrick Winograd. On this edition of the podcast, our topics are reviewing my weekend predictions, a review of the last week's college football games, including the CFP and a preview of the Cotton Bowl and also the Orange Bowl, the two semifinals this year. And then we will talk about week 18 in the NFL in the first round of the playoffs. And then look back at the last week in college basketball and the NBA. So let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media at 4th and 24, those handles on Instagram and on Twitter. I went 4-0 in my NFL predictions. I went 3-1 in my NBA predictions and went 4-0 in college basketball predictions, which means that overall, of course, I went 11-1, if you can do that quick math. That brought me to a 1,247-773 overall record at an even 2,020 games, which is obviously a big number for this podcast because that is the year that it was founded. At this point, now has been, or I guess has had episodes recorded in five different calendar years. If you want to go that far, I guess, or actually six different ones, because 2020 all the way to 2025, five full years of the podcast at this point, which is pretty crazy. But if you want to go into those games more specifically, of course, like I said, very good week, only one loss. So I'll start with the NBA, where I did have that one loss. The Celtics beat the Rockets 109-86. I had that game picked correctly. Celtics, obviously a very consistent team, always doing their thing, winning games at a very, very steady pace, although they ran into some trouble later in the week that I'll talk about. But the Thunder beat the Knicks 117-107. Speaking of that trouble, we'll talk about that later. The Cavs beat the Mavericks 134-122. Kind of felt bad picking this because the Mavs have had guys that are kind of in and out of the lineup injury-wise, especially Luka Doncic has been injured for a little bit. But, you know, they're still a good enough team that they can compete. And it was one of the better games of the weekend anyway, without picking the same team twice. And then you had the Spurs and the Nuggets. I could have picked this game twice if I wanted to, because for some reason they played on back-to-back days. And, you know, yeah, that happens occasionally. But the weird thing was the Spurs played at the Nuggets, and then the Nuggets played at the Spurs. I might have reversed the order. But point being, they played one home game each on back-to-back nights, which just doesn't make much sense. But I am talking about the first game of those two. The Spurs won that game 113-110, so I got that wrong because I picked the Nuggets in the Friday game. Had I switched the date or had I switched my prediction and kept the date, then I would have been correct because the Nuggets actually beat the Spurs in overtime on Saturday. But, of course, I picked the Nuggets-Spurs game on Friday, so I got it wrong. But anyway, that was the one loss of the week. Sticking with basketball, in college basketball, I went 4-0. A few interesting games, and then not so much for the rest of them. Number 5, Alabama beat number 12, Oklahoma, 107-79. That was not the interesting game. Number 13, Texas A&M beat Texas 80-60. That was also not the interesting game. Number 24, Ole Miss beat Georgia 63-51. Technically went down to the wire there, obviously a pretty close game, but at the same time, low scoring, some ugly basketball, I guess, would be a word that I might use to describe it. Ole Miss with really good defense all night long. And then sticking with that theme of all SEC games, I'm going to switch up the conferences next week, but it only felt right given how they've been to open the season that the first week of conference play kind of throughout the country, I would stick with picking only SEC games because it's the best conference by a wide margin. But the last one, of course, number 10 Kentucky beat number 6 Florida 106-100. Got all those predictions right. Again, though, next week, there will be different conferences, I promise. It's also just because, you know, the matchups will change. Tennessee plays Florida tonight, so, you know, there won't be as many marquee matchups just because of the way that it works in terms of rankings and just kind of that random luck of how the schedule worked out. There will be better games in other conferences, and I will pick those games. But anyway, moving on from that, in the NFL, I went 4-0. Some of these games weren't really that relevant, but I had to pick some between good teams that had some relevance. The Bengals beat the Steelers 19-17. That game definitely relevant. The Commanders beat the Cowboys 23-19, although actually that Bengals game did end up being irrelevant, but I'll talk about that later. The Commanders beat the Cowboys 23-19, relevant for seeding. And the Seahawks beat the Rams 30-25. That game not really relevant, but, you know, a close game between two winning teams, which was honestly rare this weekend if you looked at the schedule. And then the Lions beat the Vikings 31-9. Of course, that game, the most important game of the week, the battle for not only the one seed in the NFC, but also for the NFC North as a division. Of course, the Lions come out on top, and that means that, well, pretty obviously, that means that the Lions end up taking the divisional crown there, and we'll talk about how that affected the playoffs later. But that is all I have for my weekend predictions. Again, stay tuned for my predictions for next weekend, which will be posted on social media on Thursday. Let's now turn our attention to college football with a look back at last week's bowl games and a preview of the second round college football playoff, as well as obviously those bowl games that were CFP games as well, the quarterfinals last weekend, actually last week, I guess. But LSU beat Baylor 44-31. Chris Hilton Jr. came back in this game. Garrett Nussmeier played great in this game. And Baylor ends up losing that one. LSU, strong finish to the season for them to get to 9-4. Louisville, they beat Washington 35-34. They were winning 35-21 entering the fourth quarter after a tie at the half. Both teams tied at 21 at the half. Washington actually did score to bring this within 1 point and then went for two to go and try to win the game. Both of these teams playing with backup quarterbacks, but so we continue to see the bottom part of the middle of the Big Ten competing with the top of the ACC behind, obviously, those two playoff teams. And then Miami as well, at the top, near the top of the conference. But, you know, if the bottom of the middle of the pack in the Big Ten is competing with the top of the middle of the pack in the ACC, that should tell you something about the two conferences and their level this year. Improving that Big Ten dominance this season, even after the 6-6 Washington team couldn't quite beat 8-4 Louisville. Of course, the backup quarterback thing makes it really hard to compare teams. But in these two games, there were no backup quarterbacks playing. Number 20, Illinois, beat South Carolina 21-17. Again, South Carolina, one of those teams, myself included, who people argued should have been in the playoff. That was my personal pick out of the three lost SEC teams. Although at the same time, I'd said very firmly multiple times that I didn't think any of the three lost teams deserved it. I just thought that if there was going to be one, that's the only argument you could make because they played so much better at the end of the season and had that win over a playoff team in Clemson at the very end. But not only did South Carolina lose to Illinois, which was, by the way, a great win by Illinois, and they actually end up probably as the best three-loss team this season after all that, excluding teams that lost their third game in the playoff. Michigan beat Alabama, the number 11 team in the country, 19-13. The Wolverines got off to a strong start behind some Alabama turnovers. They were up 16-0 in the first quarter. Didn't do much on offense for the rest of the game, really for any of the game. But Alabama spotted Michigan too many points. That defense held up strong, even without really any of the guys that had held so strong all year long. You know, yes, Josiah Stewart and Derek Moore played on the edge, but no Kenneth Grant, no Mason Graham up the middle, no Will Johnson in that game, although Will Johnson has obviously missed a significant portion of the year. But a lot of opt-outs for Michigan, and they still played just fine on the defensive end. Meanwhile, Alabama had some opt-outs of their own, but they still had Jalen Milroe. They didn't have Justice Haynes, who actually transferred to Michigan from Alabama, of course, but they still had Jam Miller, who played enough snaps this season, had most of the receivers as well, so just kind of a bad look for Alabama at the end of the season, and really a bad look for the SEC after all the complaining that all of their coaches did, except for one coach who actually did most of the complaining, and we'll get to that last. But talking about the teams who did make the playoffs, still a bad look for the SEC, frankly, as number 7 Notre Dame beat Georgia 23-10. I had stuck with that prediction for a while. I had that before the playoff. I continued it last week when we gave ourselves the opportunity to change the pick. Didn't feel like it. Didn't think I was going to be wrong. Felt very confident in Notre Dame's ability, and they proved me right. They won this game pretty easily, frankly. Just, you know, it was sloppier than honestly I expected it to be on the offensive end for Notre Dame, but they put 23 points on the board, and that's really what's important. Obviously, turnover late in the first half really gifted them one of those scores. But at the same time, that's Georgia's fault, and that's kind of the thing that you do expect when a backup quarterback is playing, which is why I picked Notre Dame in the first place. Even though I think Notre Dame actually is probably better than Georgia full strength too. But anyway, moving on from that, number 5 Texas beat Arizona State, the number 4 seed, of course. ranked a lot lower than that, but the number four seed, 39-31. But it took them double overtime. Texas started out with a 14-3 lead, actually a 17-3 lead going into the half. And Arizona State managed a safety and a field goal before the fourth quarter to add on to their three existing points. Still down 17-8, excuse me, and at some point down 24-8 before Arizona State scored two straight touchdowns with two-point conversions, I believe in a two-minute span, if I'm not mistaken, and then forced that game to go to overtime. Texas was down to its final play against the Sun Devils, and they did get that play to go through. They got the 4th-and-13 conversion, actually turned into a touchdown. They scored on the very next play as well to open up the next overtime, and then Arizona State couldn't quite convert. Some controversial calls on both sides in this game, but honestly, the thing that I think everybody should be talking about is the fact that it was really the most entertaining playoff game we've had so far, and definitely showing that those conference champions, they're there for a reason. Really, all the conference champions played. Actually, the conference champions that played well were actually not the ones that were ranked 1 and 2. Georgia did not play well, and then the next team we're talking about, Oregon, they did not play well at all. Ohio State up 34-0 on the Ducks early in the second quarter. It was just a disaster for Oregon. They couldn't stop anything that Ohio State was throwing their way. Couldn't stop the run. Couldn't stop Jeremiah Smith, although no one really has all season. I mean, I guess Michigan to an extent, but not really. That was just really domination overall in that game and just a low-scoring game. But look, Ohio State throughout the playoff has looked like the best team. That's just a fact. There is no denying that. There is it's not like they are unbeatable. They lost twice this year after all. But at the same time, this Oregon team was one of the two teams that beat Ohio State all year, the other one being Michigan, and they're not in the playoffs, so it's irrelevant. So it's interesting to think about that, but Ohio State definitely is playing the best out of all four teams. They didn't have the best season out of all four teams, but they are currently playing the best, and that's what's important. We'll see if that changes in coming weeks, and I'll talk about that in a second. But then you had Penn State, who beat Boise State 31-14. This is a really competitive game, despite the scoreboard not necessarily saying that it was that close. At the same time, I felt like last year's national championship game was pretty much the same thing in terms of, I think it was a 31-13 score in favor of Michigan, and it was still, you know, it still felt like it was close up until the end. So same kind of scoreline, same kind of game, to be quite honest, but Penn State escapes with the victory. And then you have Buffalo, who beat Liberty 26-7. That was the final game of bowl season, actually, I believe, beyond the playoff games. But Texas State beat North Texas 30-28. Really entertaining game there, although I can't lie, I was watching college basketball a lot more. Then you have Minnesota, who beat Virginia Tech. Minnesota ends the season with 8 wins. Very, very strong showing by the Big Ten, like I said before. And finally, one of the three lost teams that did actually win a game, Ole Miss beat Duke 52-20. Ole Miss showing, maybe we should have made the playoff. And, you know, I still think the answer is they shouldn't. I mean, I've said this many, many times, and I'll say it one last time. They shouldn't. None of the three lost SEC teams deserve to be in there. Frankly, you look at the way Georgia looked, and you look at the way that Texas, you know, they beat Clemson pretty easily, but, you know, they went to overtime with Arizona State, who was the team that everybody complained about getting a bye, and almost came out with the victory in that game. So, say what you want about these teams. I don't think the three-loss SEC team is still a legitimate argument, especially after how much they got embarrassed in bowl season. Or, not exactly embarrassed, but, you know, for a conference that does all that talking that they do, that's not the performance that you can... That's not a performance that walks the walk to back up the talk, if you get what I'm saying. But at least Lane Kiffin, who frankly does a lot of the talking, his team came out and they performed. So, guess in the grand scheme of things, that's all that matters, that he had his team perform. But then moving on to the playoff preview. In the Orange Bowl, we have Penn State and Notre Dame. And in the Cotton Bowl, we have Texas versus Ohio State. I think you can make the argument that really from the beginning of the season, and I think even my predictions, I'm pretty sure I had I had Texas, Ohio State, Oregon, and then Georgia. Of course, Georgia got eliminated in the semis. Yes, that's true, by Notre Dame. But then, you know, Ohio State and Oregon played in the quarters. I should have said Notre Dame won in the quarters. Obviously, semifinals still coming up. But, you know, it was impossible for all four of them to make it. But those were the big four heading into the year. They ended up pretty much being the big four because the lowest seeded of them all, Ohio State, is the one that looks the best. Texas, the second lowest seeded one, also won their way into the semifinals. And then the two that were the highest seeded in the regular season didn't necessarily follow it up in the postseason, but obviously played well enough to claim those seeds in the first place that they deserve a lot of praise for the seasons that they had. But moving on to the actual matchups rather than the predicted ones from the beginning of the season, I picked Notre Dame before the bracket, or not before the bracket came out, but after the bracket came out, before the game started, to win it all. I don't really feel like there's a reason to back off of that other than the way that Ohio State's been playing. So for now, in this game, I'm going to pick Notre Dame to beat Penn State. I mean, Penn State's been playing well, but you could really easily make the argument that they've played the two weakest teams in this field. I personally wouldn't make that argument, but it's possible to make it. You know, it's not totally out of the realm of possibility that that's true. So they get some credit for me for how they played, but not too much. Whereas Notre Dame has played Indiana and demolished them, and then played Georgia, who everybody thought was the favorite heading into the season, as they seemingly always are. Or at least the second favorite or co-favorite with Ohio State, and they beat them pretty easily. So I like what I'm seeing from Notre Dame. And I think the other thing that's good with them is that they haven't even played their best game yet. I feel like Ohio State might have played their best game against Oregon, whereas Notre Dame can still play a better game this season. And I wouldn't be surprised if that came either in this one against Penn State or in the final against the winner of Ohio State and Texas. To be honest with you, I don't think I have another pick other than picking Ohio State. It just feels foolish to pick against them with how they're playing right now. I mean, at the same time, you're giving a team in Texas that is definitely one of the best teams in the country, has one of the most talented rosters in the country, you're giving them the opportunity to take on the underdog mentality, so that can always be a little bit of a dangerous thing. But Ohio State, you know, they were favorites against a team that they lost to earlier in the year. In that Rose Bowl game, and they played that role and won it. So I don't really think that it's going to affect them too much being heavy favorites. If anything, it's just about how much Texas can gain from taking on that mentality, but I don't think they gain much. I think Ohio State wins. And that's all I have to say about the playoff. We will, of course, talk about those games next week. Those will be the only two games, so just those two playoff games is what we will review. And instead, now we will turn to the NFL, where the playoffs are about to start as well, after we talk about Week 18 and what those games meant for the playoff, and then predict some of those games and talk about who might win the Super Bowl this year. Starting with the action on Saturday, the Ravens beat the Browns 35-10 in the first game of the weekend. Obviously, kind of an expected result there, but it mattered for seeding and clinching the AFC North, so the Ravens did just that with that win, which meant that the Steelers and the Bengals game was only about the Bengals' playoff chances, and then the Steelers' seeding as well, but, you know, a little bit less important there. But in that game, the Bengals beat the Steelers 19-17. It kept their playoff hopes alive until the Broncos won 38-0 over the Chiefs. So, again, going to do a quick review of all these games, but just kind of telling the story of the weekend. The Broncos, of course, clinching that playoff spot. All they had to do was win the game. And also, the Bengals did need the Dolphins to lose, although the Dolphins actually did lose this weekend. The Jets beat them 32-20. Aaron Rodgers' four touchdown performance there in that game. I believe I read somewhere that it was his first since 2021. But the Jets won that game, spoiled the Dolphins' chances, although, again, it didn't matter because the Broncos won anyway. Meaning they made the playoffs. The Buccaneers beat the Saints 27-19 to secure that division, the NFC South, although, once again, didn't matter because the Panthers went on the road and beat the Falcons 44-38 in overtime. And finally, as I mentioned, weekend predictions, the Lions beat the Vikings 31-9. They claim the one seed. And it also is worth mentioning that as a result of the Patriots' win this weekend behind Joe Milton's strong start that kind of came out of nowhere, the Titans got the number one pick. If the Patriots had lost that game, excuse me, they would have had the number one pick instead. But because they won, they got the number four pick instead. It ended up being Coach Gerard Mayo's final game as the coach of the Patriots. Unfair to give him only a season. Honestly, I hate it when teams do this. It's not the first time that this has happened, but, you know, give a coach, a first-time coach at that, which makes it even worse, 1 year to figure things out when you know that your team isn't good enough to compete, and you just hope that they compete, and then when they don't, you just fire him? I mean, it really makes no sense. There was no chance for him to ever put out a winning team. They didn't give him the chance to do that. So, really unfortunate there for Gerard Mayo. Hopefully he gets another opportunity sooner rather than later, but the Patriots kind of destroying that chance early in his career there, just not really good business at all. But moving on to the playoffs and our playoff preview. On Saturday, we have the number 5 Chargers against the number 4 Texans, of course, that being the AFC, winner taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Also in the AFC, the number 6 Steelers play the number 3 seeded Ravens. Another that's a divisional matchup there, which is interesting. And then on Sunday, the number 7 seeded Broncos play the number 2 seeded Bills. So all the AFC matchups there, of course, the winner of those latter two games will play each other, or the winners, I should say, of those latter two games will play each other. And then moving on to the NFC, it's the Packers versus the Eagles. Packers with the 7 seed, Eagles with the 2 seed. Pretty tough matchup there, honestly, for the Eagles in terms of drawing the Packers as a 7 seed. But the Commanders, they're the number 6 seed. They will play the number 3 seeded Buccaneers. Of course, the Commanders claiming the 6 seed because they won this weekend. Packers lost this weekend against the Bears on the last second field goal. And then finally, the Monday night game, which is an interesting wrinkle there. The 5th seeded Vikings playing the number 4 seeded Rams, with the winner taking on the number 1 seeded Lions. Again, a chance for another divisional matchup there if the Vikings win. If not, it's a rematch of last year's Goff versus Stafford Bowl. And it will be in Detroit once again if that happens. Obviously, Detroit has home field until the Super Bowl, but of course, this is the NFL, so it doesn't matter because there is no non-neutral site Super Bowl. So the Lions have home field in the NFC and the bye. The Chiefs have home field in the AFC and the bye. We already knew that, though, heading into the week. But an interesting playoffs coming up. Really, really interesting matchups all around. Hard to get a read on a lot of these teams, to be quite honest with you. There's a lot of weird injury situations going on. The Commanders have been kind of playing down to their opponents recently, but still look pretty good overall. You have the Rams, who you just never know what you're going to get. You know, they've had their games where they get established the run early, and then they look great. They have their games where they can't establish the run at all, and they really don't look great. We'll see what happens in that game against the Vikings. And then the Packers and the Eagles, of course, it's really going to hinge on some injuries. I mean, Jordan Love seemed to get injured in that game on Sunday, but Jalen Hurts hasn't played because of his concussion in the last 2 weeks. So, kind of interesting. A lot of wrinkles that are kind of affecting these matchups, but I'll go ahead and predict all of them. Sorry to the AFC, but I'll talk about that right now. I'll predict all these games, starting with the Chargers and the Texans. I don't like the way that the Texans have been playing at the end of the season. I don't necessarily think that the Chargers have been playing amazing either in terms of the overall season, but at the same time, I like the Chargers' chances in this one. I mean, the Texans just, they kind of sleepwalked into the playoffs, and I talked about it a lot, that they had that 5-1 start and then just kind of really just were slow throughout the rest of the year. They just didn't look great when they did win games. They just really have a weak division that kind of allowed them to win all those games. Like I said, that 5-1 start, a big help there, went 5-6 in the rest of the season to end up with that 10-7 record. So I'm picking the Chargers to go on the road and get the upset in that first game on Saturday. Then picking the Ravens. That is definitely not picking the Steelers. They're favored by 10 in this game. They have the biggest line in their favor this weekend. I think that's well deserved. I think they are the far better team than the Steelers. But at the same time, they lost to them earlier in the season, 18-16. They bounced back and beat them at home later in the season, 34-17. And with the way the Steelers are playing, I like the Ravens in this one. For sure, Ravens playing really, really well at the end of the year. And frankly, I'm going to spoil it right now, they're my Super Bowl pick. I feel like I feel like I picked this team too many times, honestly. I feel like I end up picking the Ravens to win it all a lot, and it never ends up being right. You know, it's always Mahomes coming out of the AFC. But I really do think that they have finally matched Lamar Jackson's talent with enough weapons on the edge, even with Zay Flowers potentially being out. I think they've matched it with enough talent. I think that Derrick Henry adds another bruising factor to this team that, you know, Lamar, as much as he is an amazing runner and obviously an MVP contender because of what he's done as a passer this season, one of the best passing seasons of all time, he is based off of elusiveness. And I think that, you know, in some bad weather, it kind of, that part of his game can kind of get limited a little bit. Whereas Derrick Henry, he's just going to run through somebody's face. I mean, it doesn't really matter what the weather is. Rain or shine, he will be running through somebody. And that's kind of that element that I think the Ravens maybe have been missing a little bit that they're now going to have this year, that bruising aspect in the run game. I think it's going to take them over the edge along with how well their defense has been playing recently. So I have the Ravens winning the Super Bowl. And, of course, that starts with a victory against the Steelers. I also like that they're on the opposite side of the Chiefs, so they will play them in the AFC Championship game. That would be a rematch of last year, I believe. So that would be kind of interesting to see. And also, I think, gives them some extra motivation there in that game. But the rest of this side of the AFC, come on, it's the Bills. I mean, frankly, I'm honestly kind of surprised that the Bills aren't favored by more than the Ravens are. I guess the Broncos have played a little bit better, or maybe just expecting a lower scoring game overall, but give me the Bills. No offense to Bo Nix and the Broncos, but they're a young team. I just don't think they're ready for this moment yet, playing against an MVP contender in Josh Allen, playing against a team that has made their mark on the playoffs multiple seasons in a row, despite not being able to make it to the Super Bowl. They clearly have what it takes to win this game in what's going to be a comfortable environment in Buffalo. I just don't see the Broncos coming out and winning this game, and I don't think that's very surprising either. Like I said, I have the Ravens winning the Super Bowl, so if I was going to extend these predictions, I have the Ravens over the Bills. I have the Chiefs over the Chargers again, and then obviously Ravens over Chiefs. And moving on to the NFC to say who I will have taking on the Ravens in my predictions, starting with these first-round games. And again, I'll talk about each of the games next week as well with the fresh look after they've played those first-round games, the wild-card games. I'll talk about the actual matchups, not these hypotheticals based on who I think is going to win this week, and I'll reanalyze all that stuff. But for now, I'm going to give my full predictions and then, again, adjust it next week as well. I won't adjust my predictions, but I will say, of course, who I think is going to win all of these games next week in terms of the new matchups, despite the fact that my original predictions I might go against. But in the Vikings and Rams, I'm picking the Rams. Call me a homer. It is what it is. I think that they're going to win this game. I think that the Lions put on a show last weekend of how to stop the Vikings. And I don't think that the Rams have a roster, that can't replicate what the Lions did. I mean, the Lions have a really banged up secondary, really banged up defense overall. I don't think that the Rams defense is stellar by any means, but I think they can recreate that performance. Not easily, but I think it's within their possibility. So I'm going to say the Rams win this game at home. Earlier in the season, the Rams beat them at home 30-20 on a Thursday night game. That game was the return of Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua earlier this season. So, you know, the Rams have now settled into having both of those guys back. But I really think this is a game that the Rams can win, and I do think they are going to win. That was kind of the start of the turnaround when the Rams won that game. And I think that they're going to continue the momentum and win this first-round game. Then moving on to the other ones, I think the Commanders go on the road and beat the Buccaneers. I know Buccaneers are favored in that game. I think Jaden Daniels does it. I think he goes on the road. I think he beats Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, they are favored in this game, like I said, but they're not necessarily playing out of this world type football right now. They lost to the Cowboys 3 weeks ago, excuse me. They almost lost to the Saints this weekend. The result they had against the Chargers on the road is really, really impressive. And their beatdown over the Panthers looks really good, considering that the Panthers were able to have a pretty solid end to the season with the emergence of Bryce Young there. But at the same time, I like Washington. I really think that this team is strongly built. I know that they don't have the playoff experience that the Buccaneers do, but I don't think the Buccaneers are in the playoffs if it's not for their weak division. So I'm going to go ahead and say that the Commanders win that game. They played in enough big games this year. They have some crazy luck going their way too, or not even luck, but just clutchness in their favor. And I think, you know, maybe they have another one of those game-winning touchdowns. I think they've had four this season, I believe, in the last 30 seconds, including last weekend, even though it was Marcus Mariota playing quarterback. But finally, last game, even though I went in reverse chronological order, the Eagles against the Packers. This one, I'm sticking with the favorite. I'm picking the Eagles. It's a tough matchup for them, no doubt. But I think Jalen Hurts comes back in this game, and I think that the Eagles win it. I think, you know, banged up Jordan Love versus banged up Jalen Hurts. I'm taking the Eagles and their roster over the Packers, especially with home field advantage any day of the week. So give me the Eagles in that one. And then in the second round, in the divisional round, I hate to say it, but, you know, even as a Rams fan, the Rams are not winning at Ford Field. It is what it is. So the Lions, I have them winning that one, moving on to the NFC Championship game. And then in the Eagles and Commanders hypothetical game, I'm going to take the Eagles, and I will take the Eagles to beat the Lions on the road. I know it sounds crazy, but I think the Eagles beat the Lions on the road, giving a matchup of the Birds in the Super Bowl, the Ravens versus the Eagles. And like I said, I will take the Ravens in that one. They are my Super Bowl pick. But Ravens-Eagles, that's my prediction. How wrong will I be? I have no idea. Probably very wrong. It tends to be that way, trying to predict entire playoffs from the first round. I'll probably want to change my mind after next week's games alone, but we'll see. Obviously, next weekend we'll see those games, and then we will talk about that on the podcast next week, so stay tuned for that. But for now, we will change gears and move to basketball, starting with the most significant college basketball games from the last week. We will start with West Virginia, who beat number 7 Kansas 62-61 on the road. No Imani Hansberry, no Tucker DeVries. That's just a really bad loss for Kansas. I hate to say it, but losing at Allen Fieldhouse to a team that doesn't have two of its better players, including its best player, is just kind of embarrassing. I mean, I'll talk about it later, but they bounced back later in the week in statement fashion. But that's still not a good loss to take early in the season. Then you have number 22, Illinois, who went on the road and beat number 9, Oregon, 109-77. Talk about losing bad games at home. That's a really big margin to lose by if you're Oregon. But Illinois, definitely looking like the cream of the crop in the Big Ten, should be the favorite, along with maybe a few other teams. You know, the two teams that are 3-0, Michigan State and Michigan. Those teams definitely looking like the favorites atop the Big Ten as well. And then, you know, a team like UCLA, and I could go on and on. There's a lot of teams in contention in the Big Ten, but Illinois definitely looks like the team at the top right now, at least in my opinion. Then you have number 21, Memphis, who beat FAU 90-62. Good win for the Tigers there in terms of margin for sure. You have number 8, Marquette, who beat Creighton 79-71. Creighton, a team that's good enough to pull off upsets, has enough talent, obviously, with Ryan Kalkbrenner leading the way. But no Pop Isaacs for the rest of the season is going to be rough, especially for their tournament chances, because some of their bigger wins came when he was still playing. So a team that, you know, you have to evaluate with a little bit of a grain of salt, and they also already have lost more games than, you know, they normally would have at this point of the year. So definitely some things to consider there with that team. Then you have Michigan State, number 18, who beat Ohio State 69-62 on the road. Good win for them, although, you know, Ohio State has kind of been an up-and-down team this year, really inconsistent. They beat Kentucky by 20, but, you know, struggled in a game against Minnesota last night, so they're really, really odd to evaluate. I don't know how big of a win that is. For now, it looks like a good win, obviously, because Ohio State came off that Kentucky win looking very, very good, but we'll see how well it ages later in the season. But for now, it's a very good win. Regardless, hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. As Iowa saw this weekend, they scored 85 points, and they lost by 31. To Wisconsin. Wisconsin set a Big Ten record with 21 made three-pointers. Just an insane game offensively for the Badgers there, proving their worth. And now we'll head into the Saturday action, which is where many of the biggest games went down this weekend. And of course, starting with the number one team in the country, that's Tennessee, who beat number 23 Arkansas 76-52. Strong showing from the Volunteers, but I still have my number one team as the Auburn Tigers, who are number two in the AP poll. But, you know, receiving some votes at number one, definitely the strongest team in my opinion from watching way too many games. 84-68 was the score of their victory over Missouri. Number three, Iowa State, beat number 25, Baylor, 74-55. And then number four, Duke beat SMU 89-62. I just want to say, I don't care what order you have those four teams in, but if you have any team above any of those four teams currently, you're delusional. I mean, they are a clear, clear top four of teams. You know, maybe Florida had that argument before losing to Kentucky. If they had beaten Kentucky, I'd probably throw them in the mix, and it'd be really, really tough in terms of ordering that top five, but they didn't. As I talked about earlier, Kentucky won that game 106-100 at home. But look, Duke is out here. I mean, SMU is a tournament team, really. They are at least a bubble team, at best a tournament team, at worst a team that's a few teams out of the tournament. They destroyed them, and this was on the road, too. I mean, Duke should run through the ACC. Most metrics have this team going like 19-1 in conference, which is crazy, but it's honestly feasible. I mean, it's very, very possible. And Iowa State's out here dominating teams like they always do. Again, this was a team that was up 18 on Auburn in the second half. It's the only reason why Auburn is still ranked ahead of them, frankly, at least in the AP voters' mind. But, I mean, Auburn, I think, in terms of consistency throughout every game of the year, they've looked better. Iowa State's had some slip-ups. You know, they were close with Colorado, et cetera, et cetera. But those four teams, you can argue about the order within them, but those are the top four in the country, plain and simple. But knocking on that door, number five, Alabama. They beat number 12, Oklahoma, 107-79. Again, really, really impressive margin. Oklahoma wasn't actually supposed to play this game very close, and they were due for a loss at some point. They're not a top 15 team. They're a top 20 team, maybe. They're a top 25 team, I think, probably. But, I mean, you know, winning matters a lot to me, at least. But I just don't see that team, you know, eye test-wise, as a team that really is going to compete at the top of the SEC. And, frankly, all those teams are in the top 10 or top 15. So if I don't see them competing with the big boys in the SEC, I can't see them as a top 15 team. Speaking of those teams, number 13, Texas A&M beat Texas 80-60. Big win for the Aggies there to get that by a good margin as well. Number 14, Houston beat BYU 86-55. Really interested in seeing them play some of the better teams in the Big 12. Just haven't gotten to that point yet. Going to some upsets, Nebraska beat number 15, UCLA 66-58. It was a big one for Nebraska ball there, moving themselves off the bubble and safely into the field, if they weren't already. Arizona beat number 16, Cincinnati 72-67. Technically not really an upset if you look at how metrics view these two teams, but, you know, an upset in the AP poll, Arizona on the road in that game against a higher-ranked team, and also, you know, a team that, you know, is close enough to them in metrics that it's still definitely an upset, although, you know, maybe KenPom wouldn't say so. And then you have number 17, Mississippi State, who beat South Carolina 85-50. Again, South Carolina is the worst team in the SEC, but they're probably good enough to be the fourth or fifth best team in most conferences in America, barring the Big Ten and the Big 12, I would say. They probably, I think they're honestly not as good as, but close to the level of an SMU, those types of teams. And, you know, instead they're sitting here at the bottom of the SEC and losing to Mississippi State, who, despite being ranked 17th, is probably only like the 6th or 7th best team in the SEC. Just ridiculous. But then you have number 24, Ole Miss. They beat Georgia 63-51. You have number 20, Purdue, who beat Northwestern 79-61, a good win against a team that really, I mean, no one has blown out Northwestern all year long, so a strong showing from Purdue. Northwestern lost all their games in heartbreaking fashion, frankly, not only just in close fashion, including at Dayton. So Purdue getting the blowout there, pretty impressive. Northwestern, like I said, been pretty tough this year. But then number 11, UConn beat Providence 87-84. They were losing for most of this game. It took a late, not necessarily late, but, you know, a second-half run to really get UConn back in it and eventually take the lead, which they did, and they carried through for the victory. That's the only thing that matters in the end, but a close game against a team that they probably shouldn't be close with. At least it was the first game without Liam McNeely, so they have some excuses there, of course, and I think they'll play better in the future. But then, you know, number 7, Kansas, like I said earlier, they bounced back. Yeah, in big fashion. They beat UCF 99-48. This is a team that has beaten tournament teams this season. UCF beat A&M earlier in the season. So not like they're a pushover at all. And they lost by 50 in this game. So Kansas with a strong rebound or strong response to that loss earlier in the week at home. And the number 9, Oregon, beat Maryland 83-79. Maryland going 0-2 on its West Coast trip with a loss to Washington earlier in the week. That was really surprising. And then number 22, Illinois, beat Washington 81-77, going 2-0 on their West Coast trip after beating Oregon earlier in the week. And then finally, you have number 21, Memphis, who beat North Texas 68-64, the last ranked game of the week other than Houston and TCU, but that one not really worth mentioning as much. With that being said, it's time to turn our attention to the NBA, the final topic of this podcast. We will start in the Eastern Conference, as always, where it is the Cleveland Cavaliers in first place at 31-4. Of course, they have kind of been there all year long. I'm doing the win percentage update that I always do. If you look at their current winning percentage, they are on pace to win 72.7 games. So, teetering on the brink of making that history. I mean, if they can keep this pace up. Unfortunately, they just won 10 in a row, and they still have to up that pace. So it's, you know, maybe seeing this season from the Cavs is really just a reflection of how good that Warriors team was and how good that Bulls team was a long time ago. But the Celtics, they are 26-10. They're in second place. Crazy record for second place, but that's where they are. They were rolled over by the Thunder, though. They definitely lost that game. And got blown out, and I'll talk more about the Thunder later, but they're 26-10 on the season, like I said. Still in second place, 2.5 games ahead of the Knicks, who are in third despite losing 3 in a row. They are 7-3 in their last 10. The Magic, who just beat the Knicks, are 22-16, 10.5 games back of first place in the East. Then you have the Bucks, who are at 18-16. They are in fifth place, 12.5 games back. You have the Heat, who are 17-17. They are behind the Pacers, who are 19-18. That game that just flipped from last night after the Heat lost their third in a row in double overtime to the Sacramento Kings. But the Pacers, though, are in the sixth seed at 19-18. Just one a half a game back, excuse me, of the Bucks, and half a game ahead of the Pistons at 18-18. And like I said, the Heat at 17-17. The Pacers have won 3 in a row. They're 7-3 in their last 10. The Pistons have won 4 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10, looking like a pretty solid team all of a sudden. Deserve a lot of credit there for building that this season. Then you have the Hawks, who are also 18-18, although they have lost 3 in a row. And then the Bulls at the bottom of the playoff picture are 17-19, 6-4 in their last 10, holding on strong ahead of the 76ers, who are also 6-4 in their last 10, just 2 games back of the Bulls, but they are still 14-20 due to that really, really slow start to the season. In 12th place, you have the Nets, who are 13-23, 3-7 in their last 10. Technically, the only other team that I would say is really competitive in this playoff race, but at the same time, they've traded away a lot of their players, so we'll see how long that stays for. The bottom three in the East, of course, the Raptors at 8-28, the Hornets at 7-27, they've lost 10 games in a row, and the Wizards at 6-27. Moving on to the Western Conference, the Thunder have the longest winning streak in the league, not the Cavs. It's the Thunder at 30-5 overall. They have won 15 games in a row. It's just crazy what the run they've been on recently. Behind them, you have the Rockets and the Grizzlies, who are 23-12 and 24-13. Both of them 6-4 in their last 10. Both of them 7 games back of the Thunder, tied for those second and third seeds currently. And then you have the Nuggets, who are 20-14 in fourth place, 9.5 games back, 6-4 in their last 10. The Lakers at 20-15. Are 10 back and just a half game back of the Nuggets. They are in the fifth seed currently at 7-3 in their last 10 and 20-15 overall, like I said. You have the Mavs and the Clippers, who are 20-16 on the year in the 6-7 spots, although they have flipped fortunes recently. The Clippers 6-4 in their last 10, while the Mavericks are just 3-7, including 5 losses in a row. Like I said, very banged up right now. And then the Warriors and the Timberwolves tied with 18-17 records on the season. They are tied for the 8th and 9th spots, both of them 4-6 in their last 10. The Spurs are at an even 500 record and are in the playoff field currently in the 10 seed as an 18-18 team. Then you have the Kings, who are 18-19, just a half game out behind the Spurs. They've now won 5 in a row after Mike Brown's firing, which is a little interesting. I don't know if that's really just coincidental timing or if it really made a difference, because Mike Brown did win Coach of the Year a few years ago, so hard to say. NBA coaches kind of come and go. It's really, really, really odd how quick coaches come and go in the NBA, in my opinion. But we'll see if this can keep up. If it does, maybe that coaching change was the spark the team needed But we'll just have to see. Then you have the Suns, who are 16-18. Speaking of a spark, they're one game back of the Spurs for the playoff spot, and they just inserted Bradley Beal into the bench rotation out of the starting lineup, which is an interesting move, and he scored 25 in his first game in that role. So we'll see what happens with that going forward. We'll see if that influences a trade decision, if it influences how the Suns build out the rest of their roster at the trade deadline. Who knows? Then you have the Trailblazers at 12-23, 18 games back. The Jazz at 9-25, and the Pelicans at 7-29. Despite winning their last two, they are still easily the worst team in the West. Not the worst team in the league anymore, though. That is now the Washington Wizards. But with that, that is all we have for this podcast. That will wrap it up. Stay tuned for our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, January 14th, where we will look back at my weekend predictions. Have another look at playoff action, this time just the semifinals, of course, in college football, and then the NFL playoffs. Of course, the wild card round will have wrapped up by then, and we will talk about the divisional round, preview those games, and we will again talk about basketball with another weekly review of both the NBA and college basketball. In the meantime, please be sure to check out my additional content, including my weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted weekly on Wednesdays throughout the season, eventually switching over to Monday and Friday, but for now, still Wednesdays. And my picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted, as always, on Thursday. All of this content on our social media handles, at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on Twitter and Instagram. And some of that content on our website, 4thand24.com. Same spelling, with a .com. Thank you for listening, and Happy New Year.